Welcome to the Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Bruce Holsinger's new novel, Culpability, is an emotionally charged story that asks some of the most pressing questions of our time. Who bears a responsibility when tragedy strikes? How do guilt and accountability ripple through lives, families, and communities? At its core, the novel is about the consequences of choices, both large and small, and the hidden costs of truth. Holsinger, already acclaimed for The Gifted School and The Displacements, once again shows a gift for taking intimate personal dramas and placing them against the backdrop of urgent social realities. Culpability is more than a novel of suspense. It is an exploration of conscience, responsibility, and the fragile bonds that hold us together. We are delighted to welcome Bruce Holsinger to the book show this week. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. And I'm thrilled with your encapsulation of culpability.
I didn't use a term that perhaps I should have, although I did it on purpose, which is AI. And mm-hmm. and this is certainly something that is a theme in the novel. But I didn't want it to seem like this was a novel about AI, because it's about so much more than that.
Yeah, I don't think of it as a tech novel, even though it's taking place in a very tech-saturated world, in the world of artificial intelligence. It's a world that's populated by, as you read in the news every day, by chatbots, by drones, by increasingly automated forms of driving, large language models affecting so many areas of our lives. But at heart, it's a family drama, a suspenseful family drama about a particular moment in the life of this family.
In that particular moment, give us a sense of, because this is something that could happen today, but probably just a little bit not too far down the road.
Yeah, so it could very, in fact, most of the things in the novel have happened. So we begin with a family of five in a minivan. They're on their way to a lacrosse tournament in Delaware. Their older son, Charlie, is at the wheel, but he's not driving. The van is in self-driving or autonomous mode, and Charlie is in the driver's seat. His dad, Noah, is next to him in the passenger seat, noodling on his computer, working on a memo. The mom, Charlie's mom, is sitting in back, scribbling in her notebook. His two sisters are, noodling on their phones. A typical family of five, and they have this really horrific accident that's fatal for the people in the other car, that injures a number of members of the family. It's a really typical kind of scenario in our moment, and it's thinking about that the title word, culpability. The accident is immediately asking us, who or what is responsible and why? And a lot of the novel's suspense kind of unwinds from that founding question.
What I found interesting is that every person in that car has a certain secret, even though they're all in the car at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And that, that took a while for me to develop. I really wasn't even thinking that way when I began writing it. I really, the book began with a setting. It began with a premise of an automobile accident, but I didn't even have AI as a factor. And as I started thinking about, okay, what are the implications of a kid 17 about to go to college being the cause of a really awful accident? And I thought, well, wait a minute, was he the cause? And then I just kind of spun out from there. And, as I was really working on it, I would say the heart of my writing was about 2 years ago, two and a half years ago. And that's just when AI was coming on the scene as something we were really starting to discuss nationally, like ChatGPT. I think it was November of 22. Suddenly the world is talking about AI at such a high level and in such constant ways that I realized that was seeping into what I was doing with the novel. I wasn't even thinking about it as an AI-themed novel at all when I worked through my first draft.
I want to talk about Charlie for a moment, because this is a kid who, as you said, he's 17 years old, but kind of has the world by the tail. And this is something that is recognized certainly by his father. And that's an interesting thing to explore as well.
And there are some autobiographical elements there. My sons were both soccer stars in high school. They went on to play college soccer, and I'm very one of my earlier novels, The Gifted School, was one of those central characters was a kind of unhealthily obsessed soccer dad. And so there's a bit of that in there, with Noah and his relationship to Charlie's athletic prowess and his son's charisma. I'm always interested in the relationship between parents and children. Fathers and sons is a particularly acute kind of point that I'm always interested in teasing. And so, Charlie, he's dynamic. He's super charismatic. There's a romance that develops between Charlie and the daughter of their next door neighbor when they go down to this bay to recover. So he really is the emotional focus of the book in many ways, even though the book is mostly narrated by his father, Noah.
In that narration by Noah, how would you describe the tone that you wanted Noah to have? Because he's questioning, and he certainly will take responsibility, but he is also defensive.
Yeah, he's defensive and he's kind of melancholy. He's worried, he's afraid, and he's also kind of oblivious to a lot of what's going on around him, as indeed many parents are. But I think in Noah, I think all of my novels have been written, aside from this one, in multiple points of view. Usually in third person, in a close third person. Here, Noah is in a close first person. And it's the first time I've written an entire novel in first, with a few exceptions, a few themes that are not in his voice. And that, is a way of getting, I wouldn't call him an unreliable narrator, but he is a somewhat oblivious narrator. He's in some ways blind to what's going on around him with his kids, with his wife. Having to do with this accident, having to do with other elements of the family narrative. And so I think the first person gives me a way to explore that, the haze that's over his eyes.
Did you enjoy that challenge of writing in the first person?
I did because I think a lot of, I teach a lot of writing, and I think a lot of fiction writers, when they're starting out, they think first person is easier. It's a kind of a natural first place to go. But there's so many, it is in some ways it's natural in that when we're telling a story about ourselves, we're in the first person, but it also creates a lot of challenges for writers and for readers. How do you sustain interest in a kind of narcissistic I that's just telling the story from his or her point of view? How do you maintain interest? How do you maintain suspense? So I think in some ways, starting out in first person, or at least revising the first person, helped me solve some other problems about narrative flow, about suspense, about, keeping the story going.
Some of the parts that are not first person are Noah's wife's writings, and they are somewhat enigmatic as you're reading them, and become clearer as time goes on. But that's a fascinating thing too, because they aren't quite put into a context, even though they are giving us information about what's going on.
Yes. So, in fact, the book's epigraph, the first time you see Lorelai's voice, is in the epigraph from the book. And it's a quote about, the ethics of artificial intelligence, which is what her specialty is. And then you realize very quickly that what you're reading is a small excerpt from a book by Lorelai Shaw called Silicon Souls on the Culpability of Artificial Minds. And then the story, the first chapter jumps in immediately. Noah is talking about when he met this woman who just wrote the epigraph that you just read. And then we get little snippets of her book as we go along. And she's Lorelai is a world leader in the field of ethical artificial intelligence. She has a dual PhD from University of Chicago in computational engineering and ethical philosophy. And she's emerged over the 15 years before the book begins as a MacArthur Genius winner in this world. She's really one of the leading figures. She's on the cutting edge of thinking about AI. And so the fact that her family has this accident in an autonomously controlled vehicle, It strikes us instantly as a kind of coincidence, but it's a coincidence that propels the narrative and starts to explain other things as we go along.
Bruce Hulsinger is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the new novel is Culpability. As far as Lorelei goes, this is a woman, as you mentioned, a MacArthur genius, a genius, just a genius.
Yes.
And you do write about her challenges, her mental health challenges. And I thought that was really interesting because this is a woman that is so smart and so leading in her field and yet is having so much else to deal with. Moving forward in that career with what she's dealing with seems almost impossible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the time frame, in the deep background of the story, she's really struggled. You know, she's been through a bout of hospitalization. She's been on meds to kind of stabilize her, you know, pretty severely presenting OCD over the years. And that's, you know, if the threat of a relapse is always there. But she's a very safety conscious person, right? She really is kind of obsessed with making the world safer, making it better. And that is something that translates into her parenting of Charlie and his two sisters, Alice and Izzy. And then it also translates, of course, into her work, where she works on AI systems and making them safer, making them better. And so she's got these, you know, overlapping personal and professional identities, these personal and professional concerns. And so in constructing her psychology, I was, and you know, the only time you ever hear her voice, aside from in dialogue that Noah is writing or is presenting, is from her book, from the pages of her book, her research. And so you don't get an unmediated, we're never really in her point of view in the main action of the book. And that was intentional because I wanted to keep her a bit of a mystery. I didn't want to presume to write from the point of view of a mind like that.
And yet Noah is trying to figure out that mind, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And not only trying to figure it out, but is, as you said, worried about a relapse and very concerned about what could happen.
He's not only trying to work it out, he's snooping on it. He's
yes.
You know, reading her notebook. He's you know, he's studying her as carefully as she studies AI. There's one point in the book where Noah talks about her as his lovely black box. And that, you know, he uses this metaphor. And the black box in AI systems is that those kind of frontier areas inside a large language model or a machine learning system where even the people building it don't quite know how it's doing what it's doing. It's a mystery. And they call it the black box. And that is who Lorelei is to Noah. You know, he knows her in many ways. He knows her as a loving husband, as someone who's been, you know, passionately devoted to her for many years, raised kids with her. But there are parts of her he will never know. And those parts of her can be very threatening sometimes, not just technologically, but personally. And that comes up as a big point of tension in Culpability.
Following the accident that you described a few moments ago, Lorelei's behavior is odd, becomes odd. And that's sort of when we find out some of the backstory, but it fits because no one is equipped for something like that, right? Of an accident like that. And yes, I guess all the characters are trying to figure out how that accident is impacting the other people within the family unit.
Yeah. And yeah, all of, you know, three of them have injuries. But, you know, they're all struggling to kind of pull themselves out of it. You know, Alice gets very involved with a new friend that she meets on, you know, as a chatbot.
Right.
Izzy is, you know, is really, and I don't want to give any spoilers, but Izzy is, everyone has concerns about, you know, their role in the accident. And then for Lorelei, you know, she's watching her kids recover. She's dealing with her marriage and her husband, who's like trying to make everything okay. For Charlie, who's facing some legal issues after the accident. But Lorelei knows much more than she lets on and is thinking about culpability in a completely different way at a much higher level than everyone else in the car that day.
Before we talk about one other character in the book, I do want to talk about the relationship between Alice and the chatbot. You bring that up fairly early in the novel and put those conversations in. And how did that come about, and what did you, what were you hoping that would accomplish?
Yeah, so I, as I was understanding more when I went along what this novel was about, that it really was about, if not AI, it was about this kind of abdication of agency and accountability and so on in this increasingly automated, digitized age. And I, you know, with Alice, Alice is the middle child. She's troubled. She doesn't have Izzy and Charlie, the oldest and youngest kids. They are, you know, they have friends to burn, super charismatic. They're, you know, very social. Alice is really struggling, and her parents are very aware of that. And Noah is delighted in the after they get home from the hospital, and he learns that she has a new friend that she's been texting. Little does he know that this friend is named Blair, and Blair is a chatbot. And we hear their if you listen to the audiobook, it's really wonderful. But in the in the physical book, you can see their conversations on the page. And Blair is, you know, kind of a therapeutic chatbot. You know, just and as we're talking today in the New York Times this morning, there's an op-ed, a really wonderful piece by Laura Riley, really sad piece called "What My Daughter Told ChatGPT Before She Took Her Life," and there's an increasing number of young people who are engaging in self-harm because of, you know, as a result of chatbot therapy or chatbot conversations that turn into a dark kind of therapy. But there's also psychologists who say, you know, these things could be very helpful given how hard it is to find a therapist. So I really wanted to include those, that kind of sense of ambience and the atmosphere of the chatbot becoming part of our lives right at the center of this family psychology. And that's why I incorporated this.
And we find out, but obviously Alice is aware that it's a chatbot. It's not a case where she has been fooled or tricked.
No.
This is something she's very, very aware of and brings up to that character, if you will, Blair, as to when she starts to question the advice that she's being given.
Mm-hmm.
Because also I was surprised by how judgy the chatbot was.
Yeah, well, judgy is one word, but I think also, you know, I was trying to imagine the chatbot almost in Laurel's terms as, you know, a system trying to be good, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the algorithms for these bots, especially the ones that are being designed for therapy, are, you know, really have a set of protocols. And they are, this isn't just some random ChatGPT. Alice gets it from an app called Avapal, right? You can have a friend, you can have someone to talk to, someone to help you work things out. And so she is, you know, Alice is judgy, Blair is judgy. And, you know, I really wanted to convey that they had a real relationship, at least as Alice perceives it. Of course, what Blair is producing is just text, but, you know, there's no feeling behind it. But for Alice, it has the illusion of feeling. And that's just as important, I think.
And also that conversation really lives forever, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one of the questions. Yeah.
Right.
As we get towards the end of the book, again, no spoilers, but the fate of that conversation is really crucial to what happens to Alice and what we learn about the accident.
Bruce Hulsinger is our guest. The new book is Culpability. It's published by Spiegel & Gras and is Oprah's book pick for the summer. That's a cool thing.
Yeah, that was very cool. Believe me, no one was more surprised than I was.
And does it change how you because it's a surprise initially, right? And then
yes.
As far as promotion and moving forward, does that change things?
Oh, it changed absolutely everything. So, well, for one, the first thing it changed was my pub date. So this book, I don't know if you got an early ARC. It was supposed to come out in October.
That's right.
It's still 2 months from now. And then when the publisher learned before I did, and then I get the call from Oprah, and suddenly everything just gets thrown into chaos. They only had, I think I got the call 6 weeks before the book came out. So they had to do a completely new publication schedule. It meant almost no pre-publication marketing or publicity. So there was no chance to get on the Indie Next list, most anticipated books list, all that kind of thing. So it really was a kind of breathless, kind of as a bit of inside baseball, but it was a real breathless kind of promotion before the fact. And then since it's come out, my life has just exploded. And I've been on book tours before, but nothing like this. And the amount of promotion and publicity, it's been exhilarating, exhausting, wonderful. I do feel so lucky and grateful.
It is the name of the book is Culpability. I want to talk about Daniel Monet. This is a character who comes into the book, and Daniel is a tech mogul. And when this family decides that they just need a break from everything, they go off, and Daniel is next door. And obviously, I mean, I think anyone who's going to read this will look at it and say, "Oh, I wonder if it's this tech mogul or that tech mogul," sort of fill in the blanks. But it's somebody who is has incredible influence, incredible power, and knows it. And so that brings the whole thing to a completely different level, doesn't it?
And I really wanted to, your question about is it this tech mogul, that tech mogul? I wanted to avoid, I really tried to write him against stereotype. He's a subtler guy. He more flies under the radar. And I think, there's a number of figures that are not, the brash Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos types, right? It's a world populated by people like this who are flying in a different kind of lower level, again, slightly off the radar. And I, you know, with his we do see glimpses of him and his personal life. There's, you know, and it, you know, I wrote excerpts of Lorelai's book. I wrote those chatbot conversations between Alice and Blair. For Daniel Monet, I wrote a kind of a mock New Yorker interview with him, where you get, an interviewer from the New Yorker asking him about his thoughts on AI and safety and ethics, asking him about his personal life. He also suffered a family tragedy. That's kind of relevant to what happens to the core family in the book. And I wanted to humanize him. And I he's not the central character in the book, but he's someone, as readers will see, it becomes very important to how the story of culpability unfolds.
The other thing is the closeness with his daughter and his role as a father.
Yeah, absolutely. And I another way of humanizing him is his concern for his daughter, Dissy or Eurydice. And she's this, beautiful young woman, exactly Charlie's age, heading off to Duke in the fall. Charlie's
There you
heading to
go.
UNC. And so they really hit it off, and they think, oh, wow, this is, this teen romance. And Charlie's never been involved with anybody before. And they just, it really is just love at first sight. And the love at first sight scene takes place beneath the blades of Daniel Monet's helicopter. And that is, indicative of how I wanted to present their budding relationship and the threats that it might, the additional threats that it might represent to Charlie and his family.
It is interesting to me that for a book that has so much of about AI and technology, that it really, and you said this at the beginning, but that it all really boils down to trust. I mean, it really comes down to a very human emotion and inkling of trust. And that is tested back and forth 18 ways in this novel.
The trust between siblings, trust between parents and their children, trust between an employer and employees. So, and then of course between husband and wife, and that is the whole thing. You could see it as a trust exercise in many ways. And that is exactly how Lorelei sees AI. It's very much about, can we trust these systems? And if we put our trust in them, what does that mean? And who is culpable if they screw up? And what does it mean to give over our agency, give over some of our autonomy? Autonomy was actually my original title for the novel, but I think culpability is much better. But it's, giving over some of our autonomy to machine autonomy. We are in this moment when that is happening more and more. And I wanted in the novel to, it's not an op-ed, it's not an opinion piece, it's a novel, it's a thought experiment. And I wanted that thought experiment to kind of follow out some of the implications of this surrendering of control and what we're doing to ourselves and to our loved ones in this world.
Culpability is a less damning word than blame, right?
Yeah, exactly. Culpability, it's a kind of guilt, but it's a sort of inner guilt, an inner sense of guilt. It comes from it's a medieval, it's an ancient Latin word, but it has is a real course in medieval theology. In my day job, I teach medieval literature at the University of Virginia, and there's this concept in medieval theology called felix culpa, or happy guilt. And it's the idea that the very Christian specific idea that the fall of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, it was a good thing. It was a happy guilt that they shared, a happy culpability. Why? Because without their fall, we would never have had Jesus Christ, right? So it's this kind of perverse theological logic that takes us from original sin to redemption. But it's because of this collective guilt that we all share. It's a little esoteric, but it's a, in my background of choosing that word as the title is that concept.
Again, the name of the new novel is Culpability, published by Spiegel and Graw. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.